Good morning, everyone. Here for what, our fourth case of the term, very interesting case. We are here to hear Wisconsin Carry Inc. versus the City of Madison. Council, are you ready to proceed? Please do.
May it please the court, John Monroe for the petitioners, Thomas Waltz and Wisconsin Carry Inc. The City of Madison cannot articulate where the Madison Transit and Parking Commission obtained its alleged power to regulate carrying firearms on city buses. Amazingly, throughout this litigation, never once has the city said that the commission has such power or what the source of the power is, because doing so would be fatal to the city's case. Now, Section 66.0409 of the statutes preempts political subdivisions from regulating possession or transportation of firearms. The Madison Transit and Parking Commission is not a separate legal entity. It has no independent source of power. It exists solely because it was created by the City of Madison, and it has powers only because they were granted by the City of Madison. Now, the city passed Madison General Ordinance Section 3.144H, which empowers the commission to promulgate rules. It is, of course, true that Section 3.14 says nothing about firearms. But it also says nothing about chewing gum or playing loud music or declaring war. So how do we know if the commission can make rules about firearms or chewing gum or playing music or declaring war? Well, one obvious line of demarcation is that the commission cannot have any more power than the City of Madison has. And the commission draws all of its power from the City of Madison. And the unspoken part of any grant of power from the city to the commission is that such power is limited to the power the city has in the first place. Now, the city has the power to regulate chewing gum and playing loud music, so those powers could have been granted to the commission. But what about declaring war? The Constitution of the United States reserves that power to Congress, so the states cannot do so. If Wisconsin cannot declare war, the City of Madison cannot. The city could not have granted that power to the commission because the city didn't have the power to begin with. So we don't have to worry about the Madison Transit and Parking Commission declaring war on Syria. So where does that leave the regulation of firearms? We know from Section 66.0409 that the city cannot pass an ordinance that regulates firearms.
Well, what's the ordinance here?
I'm sorry?
What is the ordinance at issue here?
The ordinance is Section 3.14 of the Madison General Ordinance.
Which says what?
It creates the Transit and Parking Commission and grants the commission the authority to promulgate rules as it deems necessary.
Does the city ordinance regulate the sale? I'm reading from sub 2, 66.0409 sub 2. That's what we're talking about, right?
Yes.
And political subdivision is defined here, city, village, town, or county. So we have to find something in the city. So no city may enact an ordinance or adopt a resolution that regulates the sale, purchase delay, transfer, ownership, use, keeping, possession, bearing, and transportation, licensing, permitting, registration, or taxation of any firearm or part of a firearm, including ammunition and reloader components, unless the ordinance is the same as or similar to, no more stringent than a state statute. So there is no ordinance of the city prohibiting or regulating firearms on a bus, right? There is no such ordinance.
Well,
there's only an ordinance that sets up this transit.
Well, the ordinance either gives that power to the commission or it doesn't. If it does give that power to the commission, it's preempted. If it doesn't give that power to the commission, then the commission has no power to promulgate the rule in the first place.
It doesn't say that in the statute.
Well, I think it does, because it says that no city can regulate by ordinance the carrying of firearms.
Yeah, and they didn't.
I'm sorry?
The city didn't have an ordinance here. and the city does not have, what is it, ordinance or resolution. I mean, if you follow the strict words of the statute, there is no ordinance, there is no resolution, there's a regulation by an administrative agency of the city. And if the legislature wanted to regulate administrative regulations of a political subdivision, it could have said that, right?
Well, certainly the statute could have been worded differently, which is a point that the city makes.
Right.
But the fact that the statute wasn't worded another way doesn't mean that it doesn't have the effect that we're arguing. I mean, there are many different ways the statute could have been written. We're dealing with how it actually was written.
That's what I'm trying to say. You're dealing with it the way it's written, and you don't have an ordinance, and you don't have a resolution by the city.
Well, we have an ordinance that either allows the commission to regulate firearms, in which case the ordinance is not valid, or it doesn't, in which case the commission had no authority to promulgate the rule in the first place.
Mr. Monroe, would you acknowledge that Ordinance Section 3.14 does not, by its own terms, regulate the carrying of weapons?
Certainly that's true. It doesn't mention firearms at all.
Okay. So given that that ordinance by its own terms does not regulate the carrying of weapons, where is the ban on the weapons ban? Where are we, what are we to assign that to? If the statute simply says you may not pass an ordinance or a resolution that affects the enumerated subject matter, and the ordinance that we are pointed to does not, by its own terms, affect those enumerated subject matters, then upon what is that preemption statute supposed to operate?
Well, the issue we have here is that the commission promulgated a rule, but where did it get the authority to do that if not from the ordinance?
Correct.
And if the ordinance gives the power to do that, then it violates the statute.
Right. That's a question to reach in just a moment, but I want to follow up on Justice Abrahamson's question just to make sure I understand sufficiently what your position is on that. So I want to make sure we carefully move from step to the conclusion. So the ordinance itself, by its own terms, does not regulate the carrying of firearms, correct?
Correct.
And so the ordinance, if we are to end our analysis there, the ordinance itself, its own terms, is not preempted by the preemption statute.
I think that would be true.
Okay.
Its own terms.
All right. So then the question is whether an ordinance that delegates the authority to a created body to regulate the enumerated subject matter is banned by the preemption statute. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Please proceed.
Thank you.
Counsel, how does the right to bear arms, the constitutional right, factor in here?
Well, I guess if it were going to be a constitutional question on the right to bear arms, you would have to posit that there is a constitutional right to bear arms on a city bus. We could have brought that issue. We didn't. I'm not here today to argue it, but I think an argument could be made.
Just like you choose to make an argument or one over the other, the argument advanced by the city is the legislature chose language one over the other. There are states like Florida, I think, and Idaho and Arkansas and Kansas and Pennsylvania and Kentucky and Virginia and Tennessee and Michigan that have drafted statute that is more expansive than 660409 that would, by its plain language, address your issue. They advance in your favor. But the legislature didn't opt to go that way. Instead, they chose this language and the assertion by the city, and it seems to me you're now acquiescing in that, that the plain meaning of the statute is not the underpinnings of your argument. You acknowledge the plain meaning of the statute does not end up where you're advancing. It may lead you there, but it's not a plain meaning analysis. Am I correct? Is that's what I took from the earlier discussion, not by its own terms. Another way of saying that is plain meaning.
No, I don't think that's exactly where we were, and if that's what you intended, Justice Kelly, that's not what I was thinking. We were talking about the ordinance and whether the ordinance mentions firearms or directly regulates mm-hmm. firearms, and I agreed that it did not. Mm-hmm. Whether the plain language of the statute then comes into play with regard to the ordinance, I think is where Justice Kelly said was the next step, which we haven't really talked about that
much. Okay, so you are relying on the plain meaning of 6604092.
Yes.
And what, and this maybe is just repetitious, but where, what ordinance do you point to as required by that statutory language or resolution?
That's ordinance 3.14, which creates the commission and gives the commission the power to promulgate rules. And so then the question becomes, well, what rules can it promulgate mm-hmm. under the statute or under the ordinance? And then whether the statute has any regulation on that or any limit on it. And our argument is that it does. It prohibits the commission from it prohibits the city from giving the commission by ordinance the power to regulate firearms. And that's exactly what the commission.
Well, I suppose asked in the converse, if there was no ordinance, what authority would there be to make such a regulation?
Exactly, because the commission doesn't have any authority inherently. It was created by the city. It derives all of its powers from the city. And unless the city gives it the power, it has no power.
Mr. Monroe, does it make any difference whether the weapons ban was adopted before or after the preemption statute?
I don't believe it does. In any event, that was made somewhat clearer by the legislature by inserting the words "or enforce." It used to say that it couldn't, that a city couldn't pass an ordinance. Now it says it can't pass or enforce an ordinance.
So is it your position that if the weapons ban was upheld, that would violate the preemption statute because that would, in essence, constitute the enforcement of an ordinance that operates in restricted subject matter area?
That's correct.
I have a question. The word preemption has been used by a member of the court, but that's a fighting issue in this case as to whether you read this statute as a preemption statute or you read it on the words of the statute. So what's the difference? Because you didn't really raise preemption as such.
Actually, we did. We used the word preemption throughout the litigation. It was in our briefs at the circuit court. It was in our briefs at the Court of Appeals, and it's been in our briefs here. I mean, we've consistently called it preemption.
So what are the standards for preemption versus the standard of just reading this statute to see what how it applies in this particular case?
I guess I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, aren't there four standards you use in a preemption case to look and see whether there's preemption? And are they the same standards you would use in this case in analyzing the very language of the statute?
Are you referring to the anchor savings and loan standards?
You can. Okay, I'll take that.
Okay. Yes, certainly you could apply those standards, and I think the Solicitor General did, in fact, brief those standards and discuss how they would apply in this case.
My other question is, does it make any difference where the city is an owner of property and regulates it as an owner versus what the city does as regulating everyone else? So does it matter that the city is regulating its ownership and operation of a bus versus the city's regulating the public streets, which you might say the city owns, but of course you might say the public owns them. So, if the city owns housing, can the city, as the landlord, say no political activity on this property?
That was a multi-part question. Let me try to break it down a little bit. First of all, I don't think it matters that it's city-owned property because of the way the statute is worded.
Okay, but
it doesn't matter. If the statute weren't there, if it were just a constitutional question or something like that, certainly it might matter that it's the city's property. But
so the city can have different rights when it owns the property and is a land, leases it out or allows use of it, than if the city is regulating me generally or everybody generally.
I think the city's powers are different on its own property generally than they are on somebody else's property.
What in this statute says that rule doesn't apply?
Well, because the statute just plain regulates what the city can do by ordinance or resolution without limitation. It's not the same as a constitutional question where, for example, the city could have more stringent rules on what happens within the city's buildings than out.
That was my point.
Right.
And so that's maybe why you didn't deal with the Constitution and are just looking at the statute, because you're limited by the words of the statute.
If it had been a constitutional question, we would be having that argument. I think I'm out of time.
But there's nothing in the statute that says you can't, that city here means as a city, not as a landlord or not as an owner.
No, exactly. It just says, period, the city can't do it.
Okay, I see that your red light is on, and we also have a member of the Office of Solicitor General who is going to appear on this same side of the argument. So we will hear from you in rebuttal, I understand.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
May it please the court, Ryan Walsh, Chief Deputy Solicitor General, on behalf of the state of Wisconsin. I'd like to do two things. First, I'd like to show that there's a conflict between state law and city law on this point by explaining how the city rule flunks all four of the anchor tests, each of which is independently fatal to the bus rule. Secondly, I'd like to show how the provisions of Wisconsin's comprehensive firearms regulation scheme protect the right to carry in public vehicles. I'd also like to show how those provisions overwhelmingly establish that the legislature has not given cities a free hand to ban firearms on their property as they see fit. Now, under the first anchor test, the question is, has the legislature expressly withdrawn the power of cities to act in this way? I think the clearest way to look at that question is to ask, under the preemption statute, is it beyond doubt that had the city enacted this bus rule in the first order.
You're talking about preemption statute. You're talking about 6604092?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so let's talk about it in those terms, right?
Then absolutely.
Then we can get away from is it preemption or isn't it preemption? Did you do it? Didn't you do it? Did you set it forth at the trial court, okay?
Yes, Your Honor, but with respect, I think it's the same question. Preemption is the question raised by 6604.09 and Act 35, which is the concealed carry law that made these expansive changes. Whenever we're talking about a conflict between state law and city law, it's the anchor test. It doesn't matter if you call it a conflict or preemption or what, that is the governing law. And the first question this court asks when it tries to resolve that question is whether there has been express withdrawal of the power. And it's beyond doubt that had the city itself enacted the rule in the first instance.
Well, counsel, it seems to me that a premise you're using before you're springing into the second part of your argument, the fundamental premise of your argument is expressed rhetorically as, how else could a political subdivision such as a municipality act except as according to law?
That's absolutely right, Your Honor, and it's helpful to think that because the city couldn't do this directly, it cannot do it indirectly. That's a very old principle of our legal system. It goes back hundreds of years to Koch's commentaries on the Magna Carta all the way up
to
30
and
cases.
If the rule was anything other, why wouldn't any municipality create any commission or any regulatory body and delegate administrative rules and not act according to and not pass the ordinances, but have the organization that it started, the administrative organization, and therefore allow form to triumph over substance.
Absolutely, Your Honor. According to the city's website, they have over 103 standing commissions, agencies, and other sub-bodies that have the power to act in the name of Madison. There's no reason they couldn't create more. They could create a personal safety commission that could decide that, in the best judgment of that commission, no one can conceal carry in the city limits of Madison.
I want to go back to something that they raised with the preceding council. Has anyone raised the question in this case? Is there any debate about who the owners of public property are in this country?
I don't think there's any debate.
Is that relevant in this in your argument?
Well, the question was raised. You interrupted me, Justice Bradley.
Finished.
Oh no, because he hadn't answered my question. See, usually it works. I ask the question, he answers, and then another justice asks a question. But what I mean to say, counsel, is the question was raised. Maybe you didn't hear it, Ann. The question was raised by Justice Abrahamson: does the city own the property, or does the public own the property? What's your answer to that?
Well, the public owns the property, but more importantly, it doesn't matter, because as this statute shows, the legislature knew how to write exceptions that denied cities the authority to govern their property as they see fit, or to write exceptions that gave the cities the power to control their property as they see fit when they wanted to. That entirely disproves the city's argument that they derive from some fundamental undisclosed source of law this power to control their property in the same way that I, as a private person, can control my property. The exceptions show it. Start with the trespass to land statute. That is one of the four specific exceptions mentioned in Act 35, right underneath the language that says concealed carry licensees can carry, quote, anywhere in the state. That statute says, after listing all of the places that private persons can exclude weapons, it has one provision addressed to local governments, and it says that local governments can exclude weapons from their buildings. There are other provisions that say lands, residences, grounds. Only that provision, which deals with local governments, speaks to buildings only, and it says you may exclude if you post a notice and that notice is disregarded. It goes to a fundamental difference between private persons and governments. Private persons have rights under the Constitution, including property rights, and also rights at common law. Governments have no rights. They are in this case, they are the creatures of the legislature. They have only the powers given to them by the legislature. They have no privileges or immunities, and they have no right to exclude from their property whomever they wish, in the way that I do, in my car.
Counsel, I see this, at least initially, as a statutory construction case. And you're advancing arguments, I don't want to editorialize, that are wonderful arguments. It doesn't mean I'll agree with you or not agree with you, but it's but I start more simply than that, and that is, what do the words of the statute mean? I explored it briefly with First Counsel. Plain meaning. I understand here that, from my perception, and disabuse me if I'm incorrect, that we're dealing with an agency rule. So I look to 660409 sub 2, and it seems to focus on ordinance or resolution. I get to the plain meaning. It seems to me you're interpreting one of those two words to mean an agency rule, which then probably is not plain meaning. Can you help me with that?
Absolutely, Your Honor. Part of the law of interpretation is taking the words on their face, but also asking, what is the legal backdrop against which the legislature acted? The courts routinely hold that when legislatures pass laws, they accept well-established principles of law. And a very well-established principle of law in this case is that what one cannot do directly, one cannot do indirectly. That's why under the first, can I, I'll explain with an example. So,
but I want to stay with plain meaning before I get to maybe contextual.
Plain meaning. I'll give an example. When a legislature passes a law that says that any person who does X is subject to penalty Y, courts routinely read that statute to mean only if you do X in this jurisdiction, not in some other jurisdiction. But there could be no evidence that the legislature even thought about that question. There's no textual hook for saying that doing X in this jurisdiction is the only thing prohibited. It's just a presumption. We presume that legislatures don't mean their laws to apply in other countries. There are all sorts of presumptions like that. One is actually at issue in this case. There's a presumption that when a legislature passes a law and it says any, like in that example, they don't mean to affect common law rights. They have to say explicitly, they have to be extremely clear that they mean to affect common law rights, even if you're just looking at the plain language of the law and it looks like, well, that affects common law rights. Courts won't read it that way. So with respect, it is a text question, but it's more than text. It's text and logic and assumptions on which the text is resting. Now, there was a question earlier from Justice Ziegler about the right to bear arms and whether it's implicated. Obviously, it's not implicated. It's petitioner's case. Petitioner hasn't argued a constitutional right to bear arms. But I do think the constitutional interest to bear arms explains a few things in this case. It explains why Act 35 is focused on governments, not on private persons and what they can do in their own cars or their own homes. It's focused on governments because constitutional rights are rights we have against the government. I can't sue my neighbor for making it hard for me to practice my religion, but I can sue my city. Secondly, it shows how this is obviously a matter of statewide concern. The legislature is up to the business here of protecting a right that belongs to every citizen in Wisconsin. Many of us drive, of course, it's very important. Many of us own our own vehicles, and we use them to commute to work, for example. Other people don't own vehicles. Perhaps they find it inconvenient, or perhaps they can't afford a vehicle. Those people need to get around, too, and, of course, many use public transportation. The legislature, in this case, has made the correct judgment, in my view, that the constitutional right to bear arms belongs to everyone, rich or poor, whether you live in a city or you live in the countryside, or whether you own a vehicle or you take the bus. It's a right important to everyone.
Can I say no one rides in my car with me if they bear arms?
Yes, you can, because this statute did not change the common law rights of you or anyone else in Wisconsin.
So I can regulate my personal property?
Yes, under the common law, correct.
But the government can't regulate, the city can't regulate its property, personal property.
That's because the government is the government, whether it's regulating property or passing laws. And governments, local governments in particular, have only the powers given to them.
No, they have home rule too, but that we won't,
they do,
we won't
right.
get into that. But there are exceptions.
Fair point.
I would like to, because your red light is on, talk about page 13 of your brief. Madison's assertion that a single sentence in a non-binding, fact and answer question, or
right.
is an attorney general's opinion on the question at issue. Well, it may not be an attorney general's opinion, but you take the position here that it's worth nothing. The document contains no legal reasoning. This is a 70-something page document. Is that right?
56 pages, I believe.
Pardon me?
56 pages.
60, sorry.
56.
56.
It's long.
It's a long document.
All right. 50 is long, 60 is long, 70 is long, 2 is short. All right. The document contains, this you're referring to a DOJ document, and you're an employee of the DOJ. The DOJ contains no legal reasoning and does not cite the preemption statute or the anchor test. It contains conspicuous disclaimers directly following it that it doesn't constitute an informal or formal opinion or legal advice. What does it do? It's a total waste of time and total waste of money. doesn't do anything, according to your pages 13 and 14. And I think that the DOJ's documents are worth more than you give it. And so does the, and I see that the Attorney General's name is on your brief, as it should be. So that's the position that their document, don't bother with it because it's meaningless. It doesn't have any reasoning and doesn't cite.
No, the position is not don't bother. This document was an attempt to be helpful to the public. It was put together by the Division of Law Enforcement Services. It's very long. It answers a lot of questions. It doesn't, by its own disclaimer, which you can't miss, right under the table of contents, it creates no rights. It provides no legal advice. And it does not constitute the formal, informal opinion of the Attorney General. Does that mean we should never publish documents unless the Attorney General has personally signed off and that we've studied the matter in the way that we would for an Attorney General opinion? I don't think so. I think it makes sense for us to publish guidance where we see fit and to make corrections as necessary.
Mm-hmm. Nothing in it supports the city here?
It could support the city, but I happen to know that the person who drafted that language thought that public bus meant something like a bus that's open to the public, like
okay.
a Greyhound.
But Council, that's not part
your
of
your red light is on.
That's correct.
Thank you.
We
thank
only
you.
Deal with the record here, not what we personally happen to know.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you.
Are you ready to proceed? You might move the mic up closer, to your mouth, because we have a lot of trouble hearing you up here. You wouldn't think we would. We're quite close, but
maybe
we have
you
trouble.
Could take off your shoes and make yourself a little shorter.
That wouldn't help the sound much, but anyway, are you ready to proceed?
Some of these speakers are at our desks, or just at our places, are just not working.
Well, I'll speak up.
Thank
May
you.
May it please the court, my name is John Strange, Assistant City
Attorney. You might move that podium up, please.
It's all the way up.
It's as far as it goes, I believe. Yep.
Well, you'll have to shrink.
Yep.
I think he can. You can just manage them, I guess.
All right. May it please the court. My name is John Strange, Assistant City Attorney. Along with Michael May, City Attorney, we represent the respondent in this case, the City of Madison. The legislature clearly, plainly, and unambiguously defined the scope of Wisconsin's local firearm regulation statute when it enacted it in 1995. There are three elements for a local firearm regulation to be preempted. It must be an enacted ordinance or resolution that regulates firearms, either the same as, similar to, or more stringent than, and no more stringent than state law. Those are the three elements that you have to ask yourself each time there's an allegation that this statute comes into play. And this statute has been at issue since the beginning of this case. In the initial petition, the statute was alleged to preempt the bus rule. When the city filed its motion to dismiss, alleging that the bus rule is a rule and not an ordinance or resolution, petitioners filed an amended petition, immediately citing 3.14, the ordinance that we talked about earlier.
I'm sorry, please, Justin.
Do you think there's a capacity issue at all with respect to the capacity of the commission to enact this rule in light of the legislation, in light of the fact that the city couldn't do it, and in light of the constitutional underpinnings?
Well, I don't think there's a capacity issue at all, because I think that if the legislature had intended to preempt a rule enacted by a commission, it could have done so by being more specific in the plain language of the statute. In fact, the statutes that I cited in the brief starting on page 11 cite examples from other states that clearly affect agencies.
Where does the commission get its authority?
Well, the commission gets its authority from the ordinance.
Mr. Strange, could the city have enacted this ban itself?
Could the city have enacted this ban itself? Well, it didn't need to because it's a transit agency policy.
But could it?
Well, if that gets to the core question, which petitioners have consistently throughout this entire litigation sort of ignored.
Yes, but could it?
I'm gonna answer that question because it comes to the issue of whether or not there's a conflict between the rule itself or a potential ordinance like the rule or similar to the vehicle statute, which is at issue in this case. And the refrain from the petitioners throughout this entire thing is that it's clear. If you read the briefs, it's clear. It's beyond doubt that the city would not have this authority, and therefore it can't delegate it to the Transit and Parking Commission. But
so it's as never, I understand it, your answer to, Justice Kelly's question is no. You say yes. I say no. What's your answer to his question?
Well, my answer to the question is you have to look at the vehicle statute. The vehicle statute is the statute that, for the first time, allowed individuals to take weapons into vehicles.
Okay, let's take this in order. So first off, just so I know how to direct my question, what is the answer? Could the city enact this ban?
Yes, it could.
Okay, so it could pass an ordinance that prohibits the carrying of weapons on a city bus, and that would not conflict with Section 660409.
Well, what the city would do is enact an ordinance that is the same as, similar to, or no more stringent than the state law, and that's the vehicle statute.
What's the number of the vehicle statute so we can look it up and decide whether we agree with you or not, Council?
The vehicle statute is 167.31.
Okay.
And subsection 2B. And it says, except as provided in subsection 4, no person may place, possess, or transport a firearm, bow, or crossbow in or on a vehicle unless one of the following applies. The firearm is unloaded or is a handgun.
Well, how is person defined?
An individual.
Well, person is generally defined in the statutes, if you look under 990, as everybody. Corporations, individuals, partnerships, body politic.
So everybody has, according to the statute, everybody may take a loaded handgun into a vehicle.
So your position is they have the authority under that statute because they're the person.
Well, my position is that it would not, an enacted ordinance that's just like this would not be in conflict or more stringent than the vehicle statute because this particular statute leaves up to the vehicle owner whether or not to allow a gun into a car.
Who owns the Madison buses?
The city does.
The city does. The people don't. You're taking the position that the people do not.
The city owns the buses. The city insures the buses. The city controls the buses.
Are you arguing that they have the same character as a private entity?
That's the issue in this case. That's the issue that has been at the core of their argument with respect to the preemption issue. The city's position is that you don't even get to that analysis because under the local firearm regulation statute, we don't have an ordinance or resolution that's subject to preemption analysis.
I want to go back to talking about the Constitution, and I know that the petitioner did not raise a constitutional issue. That does not mean that this court can or should disregard the Constitution, certainly. Article 1, Section 25 of the Wisconsin Constitution provides that the people have the right to keep and bear arms for security, defense, hunting, recreation, or any other lawful purpose. The Second Amendment of the United States Constitution provides a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. We now have a state statute providing that the people of Wisconsin may carry weapons, subject to certain exceptions that I do not believe apply in this case, anywhere in the state. Please tell me where the people have given any authority to the city of Madison or its transit commission to infringe the people's constitutional right to bear arms.
Well, the state has authorized the cities to operate public transportation systems. They've authorized them to buy buses and to provide transit service if they want to.
Is that authorization not subject to the Constitution and to the statutes enacted by the people of Wisconsin?
Well, there's a reason the petitioners didn't raise any constitutional issues in this case. And one of them is we have had the vehicle statute has been in play since before Act 35. It prohibited weapons in vehicles.
Mr. Strange, there was never, point, yes. Let's look at the language of that statute, and perhaps you could help me out on this. I believe you cited 167.31. Sub 2, sub B, sub 1. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. So that says, except as otherwise provided in sub 4, a person may place, possess, or transport a firearm, bow, or crossbow in or on a vehicle unless one of the following applies. The firearm is a handgun.
Right.
So
it's an exception. So the statute is prohibitory. It allows a handgun in a vehicle, not into any vehicle, not into all vehicles.
Well, the statute says that the prohibition applies unless it's a handgun.
Right. Handguns.
So the weapons ban adopted by the City Commission is more restrictive than Section 167.31 because it bans handguns.
If you take the position that the city, as the property owner and the person, the entity in control of the bus, does not have the same ability to exclude weapons from buses as the private vehicle owners do, then yes. But they've never been able to explain why that's the case. They've never been able to articulate anything in Act 35, either in the vehicle statute, either in the licensed carry section of the statute, or anywhere else, that removes the ability of the city, in this case, running a transit agency to control what happens on its buses.
Mr. Strange, isn't it the city's responsibility to identify the source of its authority to regulate in that manner? The concealed carry statute says that you can carry anywhere.
It does say that, but the
anywhere includes a bus, doesn't it? That's where?
Well, anywhere. We've at the oral arguments in the circuit court, petitioners have already conceded that anywhere doesn't actually mean anywhere, because they went through an entire discussion with the circuit court judge regarding places where they can't take it, including into Badger bus, including into Union cab, including into your car, into my car.
Okay. And let's stop on that point, because I think it gets to a point that you were trying to make earlier, which is, what is the source of the authority to ban someone from carrying a weapon in your personal vehicle, right?
Your property rights.
Yes, my property right. My property right is to exclude the person from the car. Mm-hmm. Does the city have the authority to exclude a person from riding the bus?
To exclude a person from riding the bus?
Correct.
Of course, yes.
Why?
Because they are running a agency, they're running a local transit agency that people choose to pay the fare and ride the bus, and when they do, they agree to a certain set of rules, and whether they illegally bring on a can of gasoline or violate any of the other safety rules, including the weapons rule, they can be excluded through the administrative agency.
Right. So the reason that you can ban a person from carrying a weapon in your personal vehicle is because you can ban the person for any reason that you want, right?
If they violate the rules of the bus.
No, I'm talking about personal vehicle. The reason that you can exclude a person from carrying a weapon in your personal vehicle is because you can exclude the person from your car for any reason that you want.
Correct.
Okay. Does the bus have the same extent of authority? Can the bus exclude a person, can the city exclude someone from riding the bus for any reason that it happens to want?
No, not for any reason.
I'm sorry?
Not for any reason.
Okay.
There could be constitutional reasons.
All right. So in order to exclude a person from riding the bus, you have to identify a source of authority to do that. Isn't that correct?
Well, the authority that the city has to operate, control the transit system comes from the authority provided by the state to run those systems.
Okay.
And so it has these buses that it controls. And
I understand
and there's
that. What I want to get at, though, is the scope of that authority. The scope of authority over your personal vehicle is entire. For any reason whatsoever, you can decide you don't want to have somebody in your car. The city does not enjoy the same scope of authority with respect to the buses. You've conceded that, correct?
Correct. It's subject to constitutional limitations, but there's been no constitutional allegations in this case.
Well, don't you have the burden of establishing where you get the authority from to adopt an exclusionary rule?
Well, the city owns the buses. The city controls the buses, just like it controls other property that it owns.
Good.
And so
let's stop there for a moment. So the city owns the buses, and the cities, qua cities, have no authority to exclude anyone from the bus because they're carrying a firearm. And this is what the preemption statute says.
The preemption statute says that the city cannot enact an ordinance or resolution that is not the same as, similar to, or no more stringent than the state law.
Right.
And in this case, the state law allows the exclusion of weapons from vehicles that the property owner owns.
Well,
and the city's point.
And you're getting that from Section 167, correct?
Correct.
31. Yes. Okay. Go
and the petitioners do not concede, they don't contest that that a private individual has a right to exclude weapons from vehicles that they own. And so the question that I've posed at the Circuit Court, the Court of Appeals, is articulate where Act 35, where the vehicle statute, where the preemption statute treats local governments that operate a transit agency buses any differently than a private individual. And in my view, they haven't been able to establish that.
Okay.
Excuse me, go ahead.
Yeah, so your analysis depends on the city having the same scope of authority to determine who rides the bus as an individual does in determining who rides in their car.
With respect to excluding weapons on buses that it owns, yes. I'm not making an argument that the city could do this on streets or sidewalks, which is one of the hypotheticals that petitioners pose. Just with respect to buses that it owns and operates, in which people choose to pay the fare and ride the bus.
But doesn't the city own the sidewalks and the streets? And people can choose not to walk on certain sidewalks or streets. But
sure,
I don't see why that's different than a bus.
Well, it's different because those are traditional public forums. City bus is not.
This is not a First Amendment case.
No, it's not. But the cases that I cited in the brief, starting on page 18, were cited because at the beginning of this litigation, the refrain from the petitioners was, well, governments have no rights. Governments have no rights. And so the language from those cases, those First Amendment cases, says that a state, no less than a private owner of property, has power to preserve the property under its control for the use to which it is lawfully dedicated. I know this isn't a First Amendment case. It's not even a Second Amendment case. But the proposition is that it's not like governments can't do anything with respect to property that they control. If there's a giant snowstorm, I can't go down to the garage and borrow one of the trucks to come shovel my driveway. They can tell me no. And in this particular case, there has to be some, in my opinion, some articulation as to why a government that owns and controls buses cannot have the same rights to exclude people from those buses as a private vehicle owner, with the exception of, obviously, the constitutional limitations regarding discrimination on the basis of race, gender, none of which are in play in this case.
Or the Second Amendment right to carry. Doesn't it implicate, isn't it your responsibility, if you wish to exclude someone from the bus, to identify the basis for it, and as you say, tie that to the preservation of the property for its intended use?
Well, the Second Amendment right to carry is not an absolute right. It's subject to reasonable restrictions, and for years, the state had a restriction against carrying guns in vehicles, and it's been articulated in cases what the safety reasons for that is.
So
I don't think the Second Amendment is an issue in this case.
So is it your position then that the weapons ban is tied to a necessary safety issue?
Of course. From Metro's position, from Metro's standpoint, it has banned weapons on buses for years before Act 35. We haven't had discovery in this case, but probably even before the preemption statute.
And so could the city, on using the same rationale that it's a safety issue, ban the carrying of weapons on streets and sidewalks?
No.
Why not?
Because it would be more stringent than the state law, which says that you can take a gun onto a sidewalk or a street.
Is there any evidence in the record that weapons that are legally carried by someone on a city bus create a safety hazard?
Is there
any evidence in the record that one who legally carries a weapon on a city bus creates a safety hazard?
Well, the posture of this case is it's a motion to dismiss. It was dismissed, and so there's been no discovery. Safety has not been an issue in this case. This case is about the interpretation of the
statute. I just
statutes.
Heard what you said. That's why I was asking if there was something I missed in the record. You bring up a good point. This is a motion to dismiss. What's your best argument that at the motion to dismiss stage, this case can't possibly go on?
Because on the plain language of the statute that has been alleged from the beginning of this case, there is no enacted ordinance or resolution that can be preempted in this case. The bus rule is just a rule. If the legislature had intended to preempt rules, it could have done so. The ordinance does not regulate firearms. Firearms is nowhere mentioned in that ordinance. It is a general ordinance that empowers the Transit and Parking Commission to do any number of things related to transit and parking in the city of Madison.
Mr. Strange, that's a distinction without a difference now, isn't it? Because you said that the city could have enacted this ban itself.
It is, but the question from Justice Ziegler was, what's the basis for the motion to dismiss? And the easiest basis is the basis that the Court of Appeals dismissed, that affirmed the Circuit Court on, was that there's no ordinance or resolution alleged here. That's subject to preemption analysis. So we don't even get into this discussion about whether it's more stringent than, whether it conflicts with. There's no ordinance or resolution. The legislature has spoken as to the scope of the preemption statute. And that applies to enacted ordinances and resolutions, and there's not one here.
But if you go beyond that and say you're going to read the statute more broadly to cover regulations of an administrative agency of a city, then your argument is it's covered by the motor vehicle statute.
Correct. Even if you were to assume that there is the ordinance is subject to preemption analysis, the alternative argument is that it's not the rule is not more stringent than state law, because state law preserves the ability of a vehicle owner to exclude weapons from property. And so those are two alternative bases upon which this court can affirm the Court of Appeals ruling. But in fact, the Circuit Court ruled.
Don't you still have to conclude to reach that rule? You still have to conclude that the city would have the authority to pass the ban itself, because the transit authority has only derivative authority from the city.
Are you talking about the latter? With the first basis, there's no ordinance or resolution. You don't even get to that analysis.
Well, no, but don't you?
No.
Because if it is a rule, it has to have authority. Yes.
The rule, the plain language of the preemption statute.
Okay,
just
help me.
Doesn't preempt.
I apologize for not being able to follow you, your line of logic, so perhaps you could help me with mine. So we first start out with the question of, does the commission have the authority to pass this, correct?
Correct.
All right. And then, so we ask, well, from whence does it derive its authority? And the answer to that is the city, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So in order to uphold the rule, we would have to conclude that the city has the authority to do this.
If you're going to affirm the Court of Appeals on the second basis that I articulated, if you're going to affirm it on the first basis, the simple analysis is the one that the Court of Appeals did, which is that the face of the ordinance, 3.14, does not regulate firearms. It is not subject to preemption analysis, and so you don't get to the latter analysis. There is no ordinance or resolution that's subject to preemption analysis. And I know that the legislature could have casted a broader net. They still could. And the point that the city is making is that it's not the job of this court to rewrite the law. If the petitioners want the laws to be different, if they want the preemption statute to be casted more broadly, if they want the vehicle statute to say any vehicle instead of a vehicle, they can go to the legislature and ask for that. And it allows the democratic process to play out.
Right. So that's a fair point. So let's take a look at that for a moment. So the preemption statute, and forgive me for the shorthand in referring to it that way, directs itself, its application, to ordinances and resolutions. Are there any other ways in which a city can adopt legislation other than through an ordinance or a resolution?
The Common Council can only adopt legislation through enacted ordinances or resolutions. This is one of the points that petitioners seem to not want to discuss, and it's the one that the Court of Appeals point out, which is that the legislature could have intended, when it wrote the preemption statute, when it wrote the local firearm regulation statute, to leave some room for local regulation, such as the bus rule in this case.
Okay, so let me.
It wouldn't be unusual.
Just for a moment. So if the city can only adopt legislation through an ordinance or a resolution, and the state says, cities, you may no longer adopt ordinances or resolutions relating to the subject matter, haven't they, by force of that demand, withdrawn all authority to act in those matters?
That they haven't done that in this case.
Why not?
Because the statute says that they can enact ordinances or resolutions if they are same as, similar to, or no more stringent than the state law, and that's exactly the city's point. Now,
so we're getting then back to your point that the city could have enacted this ban if it had wanted to, because it's no more restrictive than state law.
Correct. I mean, the city, again, the city would not have to, because under the vehicle statute does not prevent a vehicle owner from excluding weapons from buses.
Okay.
In my opinion, the city is just like a private operator in that respect.
That's fair. So work with me on the hypothetical then. Let's say that the ban is more restrictive than state law. Could the city have adopted that ban?
The ban is more restrictive than state law? Well, let's assume that the vehicle statute, instead of saying a vehicle, let's say it said any vehicle. Then yes. But that's not what it says. It says a vehicle. It doesn't say all vehicles. It doesn't say any vehicles. It doesn't force them onto public transportation. Georgia, for example, has a statute that says that firearms can be taken onto public transportation.
Well, this is not about forcing weapons onto buses. It's about allowing.
Exactly. It allows individuals to take a handgun into a vehicle.
Right.
But it does not force people who don't want to have a handgun in their vehicle from letting them in. And the only point that the city has made with respect to this is that rule applies to a public property owner just the same as a private property owner.
Council, I'd like to know what your best argument is for harmonizing 660409 and 16731(2B), because it seems to me that those statutes could have some conflict with one another under the facts of this case. Do you know what I'm asking you?
Yeah, and this is what we've been talking about, which is that there's no conflict because the bus rule, which is an exercise of the city's ability to exclude weapons from buses, is not more stringent than that state law. The state law allows vehicle owners to exclude weapons from buses. And so in that sense, they're perfectly harmonious.
You don't see a conflict between the two at all?
I don't see a conflict between the two at all. Now, if the local firearm statute had said you can't enforce or enact an ordinance in any manner, which is what Georgia's does, then there would be a conflict because it would be regulating it in any manner. But that's not what Wisconsin statute says. It says no more stringent than. And that's why I believe the petitioners have been reluctant to analyze the no more stringent than part of the statute throughout the litigation.
If we were to rule in your favor, what would stop a city that would otherwise be precluded from taking some action from forming a commission and endowing it with the authority to take the prohibited action?
Well, that's the hypothetical that the petitioners have posed throughout, and I think it's a non-starter. First of all, the commissions, when a city creates a commission or an agency, it only has jurisdiction over the particular areas that it is given authority over. And a city council, as the city is not going to create a commission that is going to have the authority to do what only the common council could do, which is to affect the electorate en masse, to affect the entire city, to affect an ordinance that would say that you can't bring a handgun into any vehicle. In this particular case, and this is the point the Court of Appeals made, in this particular case you have an agency, the bus system, which has promulgated a rule through the Transit and Parking Commission that says you can't take a handgun, take weapons onto a bus. And that applies only to those individuals who choose to pay the fare and ride the bus. It doesn't apply to the electorate en masse.
But what if it didn't just apply to that limited group of people? What if the commission were given broad authority and broad powers? Under your logic, that should be okay.
I frankly don't think there is that hypothetical would happen. There's no commission that could be created which would have equal power to the common council to affect the entire city.
Because what prohibits that?
Because the purpose of creating the commissions, cities creating commissions and agencies, is to do particular jobs within the city. So maybe the Parks Commission, Transit and Parking Commission, maybe a health commission. All of those things are created for the purpose of doing a particular job. There's no commission that I'm aware of that would fit your hypothetical.
That's a difference between prudence and authority, right? I might not be prudent to create a commission that has such sweeping authority. The question is, could it?
Well, and if that hypothetical were to come true, the very easy answer is that if this legislature had wanted to preempt commissions, if they had wanted to preempt agency rules, they could have done so, and they didn't, and they still could.
So what you're saying is that because the statute refers to ordinances and resolutions, all a municipality has to do to sidestep that restriction is to create a commission that would have the extent of authority it wishes to adopt a ban on the carrying.
Well, again, I disagree with the premise of the hypothetical that would happen.
Getting away from hypotheticals and going back to statutory interpretation, which is what concerns me the most, I asked you about your best argument to harmonize 66.0409 and 167.31.2b. I'd now like you to harmonize with your answer to me in the past 176.62g, because it doesn't accept the safe use regulations, please.
Great question. So that's the anywhere in the state language that you're referring
to. I'm sorry.
That's the anywhere in the state language that you're referring to, correct?
It doesn't. It's not listed as an exception to the right of concealed carry set out in the statute.
This is a very critical point and a great question. Act 35 contained the legislation to allow someone to carry a licensed weapon. And if you look at that, starting with where you've cited,
right.
It talks about allowing someone to take a licensed weapon anywhere in the state.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the vehicle statute, 167, was a separate part of Act 35. And if you look at that closely, it doesn't require anyone to be licensed. You don't have to be licensed to take a handgun into a vehicle. It has nothing to do with the concealed carry statute with respect to the requirements to be. You can take a handgun, a loaded handgun, into a vehicle whether you're licensed or not. 167 doesn't refer to 175. The only reference from 175 to 167 is it adopts the definition of a handgun. But that statutes adopt definitions from other parts of statutes all the time. So in my view, they are totally separate. They are totally separate issues.
What's being asserted to us is a statutory right to conceal carry, which is founded in 175.60. And so to me, these three statutes that we're talking about today all have to fit comfortably with one another. And I understand your argument about the first two I asked you. I don't quite understand your argument about how the last one
is, because the two, 167 and 175, are independent of one another.
Are what?
They're independent of one another. You don't have to be a licensed concealed carry owner. You don't have to be licensed for concealed carry to take a weapon into a vehicle. The vehicle statute allows anyone.
Well, if you conceal it, you're going to be in big trouble. So you're saying you can carry a loaded rifle in your hands and walk right in.
You might be in big trouble for a number of reasons, but not under the vehicle statute. Mm-hmm. My red light's on. So.
Yes. Well, I have one more question. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I want to go back to the hypothetical because I want to make sure I understand what your response was. You don't think that the city actually would create a commission that would be endowed with powers that the city does not have. Is that correct?
I don't believe that the city would create a commission that would have the powers of the Common Council, no.
Okay. I just want to continue on with a very specific hypothetical. Do you agree that under your argument, and I hate to give the city of Madison this idea at all, but the city of Madison could create a safety commission, and the safety commission could enact rules empowered through an ordinance by the city of Madison. It could enact rules banning the bearing of weapons anywhere on city of Madison property, including sidewalks.
Well, no, I don't agree with that because if that hypothetical were to happen and such an ordinance or rule or commission were to happen, you would have to look at whatever that particular regulation or ordinance was and decide whether it's more stringent than state law. And we don't have the facts. I don't know what potential safety regulations you have in mind, but we'd go through this exact same analysis. And under the point that I'm trying to make is simply that if the legislature had wanted to completely preempt the city from doing anything. It could have said so in the local regulation fire. It didn't do that. And the fact that it didn't doesn't mean that we have to be worried about all of these hypotheticals. It just means that that's what the legislature said. And if they want to go to the legislature and ask them to cast the broadest net like Kentucky and Tennessee and said, no city, no agency, no person, no anything, can't do anything with respect to anything in the occupation of the field of firearms, they could do that. I understand that, but they didn't. And so it's, in my mind, the hypotheticals posed here and the hypotheticals posed throughout this litigation by the petitioners, they don't apply. It's the plain language of the statute. Plain language of the statute that the Court of Appeals dismissed the case, that Circuit Court dismissed the case on. It's the plain language of the statute that the Circuit, that the Court of Appeals did. And if this court were to ignore the plain language of these statutes, in my view, it would have to rewrite the law.
But aren't the parties asking us to ignore the plain language of the United States Constitution and the Wisconsin Constitution?
There's been no constitutional issues in this case.
So the court should not look at the Constitution in this case.
I don't think there would be. I don't think there are constitutional issues with respect to a safety regulation that would keep a handgun out of a vehicle.
Mr. Strange, your response to Justice Bradley's third question back, does that not go back to your assertion or the proposition that the commission can have greater authority than the city itself?
Well, the city, the commission would not have greater authority than the city is. So under my argument, the city would have the authority to do this because the vehicle statute does not preclude it from excluding weapons from vehicles that it owns.
The concern that Justice Bradley was raising was assuming that this ban is more restrictive. Would the city of Madison be able to create a commission, public safety commission, that would have the authority to address matters of public safety and then pass a rule that says no carrying of firearms in parks, streets, or sidewalks? Clearly more restrictive.
If hypothetically the city were to do anything that was more restrictive than state law, and if the preemption statute, if the local regulation preemption statute preempted anything, rules, regulations, anything, then yes. But that's not,
okay.
That's not even close to what we're dealing
so
with.
So the final word on this then is, the city can't pass an ordinance or resolution that is more restrictive than state law, but a commission can.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
So a commission can't pass. So if we were to conclude that this ban is more restrictive than state law, you would agree that it would have to be struck down.
No, because the first argument that we have made is that you don't even reach that particular analysis because it's
let's assume I'm going to reach it.
You have to ignore the language of the statute that's been alleged in this case.
Let's assume I'm going to reach that question. And
excuse me, you're not going to do what?
Let's assume I'm going to reach the question of
okay.
whether this rule is more restrictive than state law. Okay? And let's assume that we have to decide that. If the rule is more restrictive than state law, is it your position that nonetheless it should be affirmed because it's not an ordinance or resolution, it's a rule?
Yes. Unless the legislature changes the local regulation statute.
So in that case, the commission does have greater authority than the city.
Well, if you get to the conclusion that it's more restrictive, then yes, the fact of the matter is that the local regulation statute only applies to ordinances and resolutions. It doesn't apply to rules. So if that rule, if you think the rule is more restrictive, then in order to get to that analysis and in order to reverse the Court of Appeals, in my view, you're going to have to ignore the plain language of the statute that says preemption analysis only applies to ordinances and resolutions. And if you do that, you'll be rewriting the statute.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Counsel.
Counsel, my question was going to be
the red light
terms,
is on.
It has been for a while.
I know it has.
In terms of the public policy, and you have a discussion that this regulation doesn't violate the public policy of the statute that would affect a person going from community to community and having to ditch the arm, take the arm, ditch the arm, take the arm, etc.
The
I'll rely on your brief on that, unless I've misstated your brief.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
Well, that there's a public policy for saying that you can't have rules and ordinances from varying from one city to the next, because you don't want to have a person traveling from one city to the next in this state having to get rid of the arms, the loaded arms, or keeping it. So you have this general rule that is set forth, but the public policy isn't hindered by the bus rule.
It's not hindered.
That's how I read your brief. Is that right?
You don't have to ride the bus to get from point A to point B.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Excuse me, before you begin, Tina, do you have any idea how much over the time we went for the 5 minutes? Okay, you're supposed to have 5 minutes in rebuttal, Counselor. I will give you 10 minutes. I would ask my colleagues when the red light goes on here to please stop asking questions so we can treat both sides of this argument equally in regard to the time we allocate for hearing what they have to say. Our Trustee Marshall will put the yellow light on when you have 5 minutes to go, so it will be a little bit, and a red light on when you are to stop, which will be after 10 minutes of rebuttal.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
Counselor, before you get going, I'd like to know how you see 167 and 175 line up. As I understood Council's argument, 167 deals with anyone being able to transport a firearm. Probably not a felon, but anyone. And 175 allows carrying concealed handguns anywhere in the state. How do those two fit together in light of the rule created by the commission?
Well, 167 has been around for a while, and previous to Act 35, it was illegal. It wasn't a crime. I think it was fine only. But it was illegal to carry a firearm in a vehicle, in any motor vehicle, unless the firearm was unloaded, in a case, and out of reach. That was the rule in Wisconsin for years and years. Then with Act 35, now you can carry a loaded handgun in a motor vehicle. It's no longer prohibited. You can carry a long gun that's unloaded and not in a case. That's not prohibited. I guess that means that you can carry a loaded long gun in a case, but I'm not sure that you'd need to, but anyway, we're mostly concerned with handguns anyway. So the bottom line is that the current version of 167, you can carry a loaded handgun in a vehicle. It's no longer a violation. So as far as that relates to the regulation is obviously more stringent than that because it prohibits you from carrying a handgun at all on a bus. So it's more restrictive than that.
So is your argument, does it primarily relate to the handgun issue, or does it relate to all guns?
Well, I mean, the case relates to all guns, but as a practical matter, you know, I think what our clients were intending is that they would bear arms by carrying pistols because or handguns, because that's the most, the Supreme Court in Heller said that the handgun is the quintessential arm for self-defense in the United States.
Except under your theory, it would include an unloaded.
Sorry.
It would include the possibly loaded in a case firearm, and it would include an unloaded.
It could include an unloaded long gun, or I believe it also could include a loaded long gun in a case. Either one. Based on 167, because those are no longer prohibited. And under the language of 660409, it just talks about firearms. It doesn't talk about just handguns or long guns in cases or not in cases or anything. It just plain says, cities, you can't pass ordinances or resolutions regulating transporting firearms, period. You can't do it. And the regulation is more stringent than that because it bans carrying firearms on buses.
But you're asking us to rule today that any firearm should be allowed to carry any firearm, whether you're licensed or not.
Well, what we're asking for is a ruling that the regulation is preempted. So you're left with what state statute allows or doesn't prohibit, and it doesn't prohibit carrying a loaded handgun. It doesn't prohibit carrying an uncased long gun, and I believe it prohibits carrying a case loaded long gun.
Just to know, Mr. Strange says that the city's commission has the authority to adopt this ban because it is no more restrictive than state law, and he points us to the fact that individuals can exclude people from their cars if they wish them not to carry handguns there. Does the city's commission have the same scope of authority as an individual in determining on what basis that person is transported in that vehicle?
No, because the state law took that off the table. 660409 says cities and counties can't regulate transporting firearms. So,
but if the city were to say, well, look, we're not really regulating the carrying of firearms, we're just making a selective decision on who gets to ride the bus, and individuals get to decide who to ride in their car, do they have the authority to do that?
No, because that is, if they're making that decision based on transporting a firearm, then they violated state law. If they're making the decision based on the chewing of the gum or the playing of the loud music, that's fine. They can do that. But state law says one policy decision you can't make is regarding transporting firearms. So if the exclusion from the bus is based on the transporting of the firearm, they can't do that.
That's based on your interpretation of the 66 statute.
Correct.
Counsel, your opposing counsel says that the Second Amendment is not in issue in this case. Do you agree with that?
It is correct that we did not raise any constitutional issues in the case.
Yeah. When I looked at your briefs, I didn't see any reference. I think there was a reference in one brief to the First Amendment.
Well, we didn't raise any First Amendment issues, I don't believe, but there were some discussions and analogies.
Amicus did, I think.
But no, we did not raise any constitutional issues.
That relates to the state constitution also.
I'm sorry?
Is there a state constitutional issue here regarding firearms?
Well, we did not bring any state or federal constitutional issues in the case.
Okay, neither federal nor state.
Neither.
Just want to clarify.
So with regard to I just want to make sure it's clear on the firearm transport statute, 167. I'm not sure why there's discussion that we sidestepped it. To me, it's not an issue at all, because under the prior law in Wisconsin, you couldn't carry a gun on a bus because you couldn't carry a firearm at all in a vehicle unless it was unloaded, encased, and out of reach. And I guess unless you left it somewhere else on the bus, it was always going to be in reach, and you still have to have it unloaded and encased. But that's just plain no longer the law. Now under state law, it's perfectly legal for you to carry a loaded handgun on a bus or an unloaded long gun on a bus. So the fact that the city has the regulation that bans carrying a firearm at all on a bus makes it more stringent than, and not similar to, state law. So it's the ordinance or the regulation is prohibited by state law. If there are no more questions, Chief Justice Rogenczak, I'll yield the rest of the time you generously gave me.
Okay. Any other questions for counsel? Thank you very much. And thank you both for your briefs. They were really good and very, very interesting to read. Important issues as the state proceeds, and it's always great to have good help of counsel. It really assists the court a great deal, as did your arguments to all of you who participated. We're going to take a brief recess now while we let people change around and get ready for our second case of the morning. We are adjourned.